So we're continuing Be'ezrat Hashem with our study of Rav Shalom Arush's book, Gan HaShalom. We are now to page 29 in the Hebrew version. And we've been through all the introductions. And now, Be'ezrat Hashem, we're into the advice itself. Bli Ha'arot, chapter 2. Bli Ha'arot, no criticism. Perek Zeh, says Rav Arush, this chapter, Nilmad et Echad mi Yisodot HaGedolim b'yoter l'shalom b'ayit. In this chapter, we're going to learn one of the most fundamental rules of Shalom B'ayit. And that is no criticism. We're going to see Be'ezrat Hashem in the chapter. The Rav is going to explain in some detail what it means to criticize and why it's so bad. But we'll take it slowly, step by step, and follow the teaching of the Rav. So here we go. Nesaper techila maaseh shehaya. First of all, he's going to give us a story about something that happened. Baal echad ba'elai. A husband came to him. Ubiyado roshima auka shel dvarim shehu oseh bishvil ishto. In his hand, he brought with him a list of all the wonderful things that he does for his wife. For example, b'chol yom hu makdish la zman. Every day he sets aside time for her. Shoel otah ma hitzicha, he asks her what she needs. Konela kol ma she'i rotza, he buys for her everything she needs, everything she wants. V'gam mefanek otah b'chol minei pinukim, he treats her with all types of treats. Yotzim migede haragil, out of the ordinary, anything she wants, etc., etc. Lechora, therefore, ishto tzricha liot hamusheret shebenashim. It should be, as a result of all the wonderful things he's doing for her, his wife should be the happiest woman you could meet. Vehine mesaper li abal, and behold, the husband described to me, Shema lamarot hakol, despite all of this, ain lo shalom b'ayit. Ishto af ba'am lo mu'utzeh, his wife was never happy. Vehi kol hazman utzavah, she's always sad. Mit lo nenet, complaints. Atzpanit, it's upset. Mit paretzet b'hat kafei ka'as no'im, I would explode in anger. How? Why? Why, after a husband does all the wonderful things he can think of for his wife, he's trying to do his best, he's treating his wife with giving her time, he's buying her things, whatever she wants, spending time to sit and listen to her, to talk to her, everything she wants. Why does he still not have Shalom B'ayit? And why is his wife always upset? Good question. The Rav Arush explains that Sari Rav Hatofa Shetea Ukeret Libod. Unfortunately, explains the Rav, this thing that he described is very well known to me. Tekef Yadati Atasiba Lechose Shalom B'ayit. Immediately, I knew the reason for the fact that he had no shalom b'ayit, says the Rav. Amarati lo, I said to him, Shadavar shehores leishto et kol haosher vehasimcha, the thing which destroys for your wife all of her happiness and her happiness, hem ha'arot shehu meir la kol hazman. The thing that destroys your wife's happiness are the criticisms that you criticize your wife all the time. Ra'iti b'mabato shedvarai kal'u l'matara. I saw in his face, says the Rav, that my words had hit the spot. And I continued to explain to him that all the time that he was criticizing his wife, as I call hamatanot hatafrukim shebaolam lo yasu ota meusheret, that all the gifts and the treats in the world are not going to make any difference to her happiness. Because a wife whose husband criticizes her, he isha shvura, she is a broken woman. Atzuva meduket miyoshet ubli tipatriot. She is a broken woman, full of sadness, depression, and without even a drop of life in her. Before we go on to explain what it means to criticize a wife and how easy it is to make the mistake, Varish is explaining to us that it doesn't matter what we try and do to make up for it. We can't make up for the fact that we are failing our wives by trying to be nice to them. Right? It doesn't help. It's not going to make it better. We're not allowed to be upset with our wives, criticize our wives, say something wrong, and then try and make it up by buying flowers. And maybe it's all okay now. It doesn't work. It doesn't work that way. It looks good in the movies. You buy them flowers and everything's okay. No. She might smile at you because, Tov, at least you're being a little bit nicer now than you were before. But it's not the answer. The only answer is the person has to stop the bad. You have to stop the bad and do good. You can't just do good and hope that your bad is kind of washed away under the carpet. She won't notice that I've actually got bad midot because I'm trying to be nice to her. No, she does notice you've got bad midot. Hashem is noticing that we have bad midot. Right? We can't, just on the general, on the larger question, we can't get away with the fact that we have bad midot by the fact that we do good things. It's good that we daven. It's good that we give tzedakah. It's good that we're kind to people, that we learn Torah, right? But it doesn't mean that we can ignore the fact that we've got a lot of bad midot that we also need to work on. And nowhere is more true than in a marriage. Just because I do nice things for my wife doesn't mean that I can ignore all the bad stuff. And it's not just a good piece of advice. In a marriage, it doesn't work. It's not just that we're missing out on working on our bad midot. We're not going to have shalom bayit that way. A wife is going to be broken. Yeah. Yes. Right. So, Nachon. So that's Rabbi Arash explained at the beginning of the book that a man needs to get married. If he doesn't get married, he can't work on all of these things. He hasn't got any real tests. His tests are very small. They're not real. And he has no feedback. He has no understanding of what he's doing because he hasn't got someone to tell him. He has no mirror. And he has no one to rebuke him. His best friend's not going to rebuke him. His chavruta's not going to rebuke him. Who's going to rebuke him and tell him he's doing wrong? No one's going to tell him. But when a person's married, so his wife's going to tell him. And if his wife doesn't tell him directly, because there are some wives who are very careful never to rebuke their husbands, and there are some wives who are scared of their husbands, and there are some wives who, for whatever reason. So even if she doesn't tell him directly what he's doing wrong and rebukes him, then he's going to know anyway because he's got lack of shalom bayit. When his wife's upset and sad and not happy, he's going to know there's a problem. He should know. So that's Hashem. He should realize there's a problem and that the problem is with him. But if it's just my chavruta, My chavruta is a bit sad and upset. Tom, I'm not going to change my life because
I don't care. He's over 40. He's not married.
Mm. Right.
He's religious. And he said he now is a king for him. And he, his wife cannot down, because his soul cannot down. Him against this.
So for a start, he's lying. Because there are very few people in the world who know Gugulim. And even people who know Gilgulim usually don't know their own Gilgulim. They may know other people. So if he's a Rav HaGaon, maybe he knows other people's Gilgulim. That's possible. But to know one's own Gilgul, you have to be a very high level. Because otherwise, you miss your free choice. If you know everything that's happening, you... And even if he's true, we saw that King Hezkiah, Blineder, knew with Ruach HaKodesh that he was going to have bad children, and for that reason he decided Lashem Shamayim not to get married, and he was punished very heavily. Right. So Mimela, I don't know your friend, but Mimela, like, it appears that he's just lying to get out of the fact he doesn't want to get married for another reason. Usually he's scared. Most of the reason we don't want to do something that's good for us is because we have fear. And it's a fear that I don't want to talk about. It's so scary for me. It's so much fear. I can't even talk about it. And I'm going to make up some fantastic reason why. Because it's much better for me to make up a reason to lie completely, sheker shekorim, even if it's a crazy reason, than to admit something very scary that I can't admit because I'm really afraid.
I was talking about it.
So Rabbi Yaakov's, just for the people who are listening on the internet, Rabbi Yaakov's advice is that if you're still breathing, you can still get married. So Baruch Hashem, that's definitely true. Everyone has a chance at every moment. But the truth is, we have a lot of reasons that we tell ourselves for why we're not getting married. Right? And to be truthful with ourselves is not so easy. We think it's easy, but it's not. We all have areas where we lie to ourselves. So in the case of your friend, he's lying to himself in the area of marriage. He's telling himself, and maybe he even believes it. I'm not sure whether he's openly or subconsciously. Maybe he believes it, right? But he's lying to himself because he's scared, he doesn't want to, he's being selfish, whatever reason. Right. The truth is, he doesn't want to, but the question is, why doesn't want to? Ultimately, everybody wants to. Well, but everyone has a Jewish neshama, Bezrat Hashem, right? Everyone has a Jewish neshama, and our neshama wants to do the right thing. It wants to do the mitzvot, right? And we have layers on top of that don't want to. And yet, we have to scrub them off and get down to our true base desire is, all things being equal, I really do, but. I really do want to do all the mitzvahs. Really, I do. But, ... There's an apparently good reason. At least on the surface, it sounds like a good reason. If I dig a little bit deeper, and if I do his bodhi tatoni, and I pray to Hashem to show me the truth and open my eyes to what's really going on, then I'm going to see, Bezrat Hashem, that it actually wasn't true. But at the time, that's what appears to me to be truth. Even though I'm kidding myself, I'm lying to myself, I don't want to see the truth. But I know deep down what the truth is. I don't like the truth. The truth is very scary. The truth can be very... truth can be too much. It's something I can't handle right now. Right? The idea that truth... what is truth? Hashem's truth is just light. Kilo, it's the light is a mashal for Hashem. Too much light, we're blinded. It's too much. I can't see it. I've got to close my eyes. I can't take that much light. I can't take that much truth. The truth is I've been living a lie my whole life. I can't take that. A person who is who's been living a lie all their life can't suddenly admit, you know what, you're right. You know what? This is all nonsense. What am I doing lying here on the beach surfing? Actually, I should be in the Beit Midrash. That is the truth. But to swallow that all in one in hit, it's too much. Even if I could sit and explain it to him, the person has to go very slowly. The Rav Nachman has a wonderful story that they made into a children's book. They made a lot of them into children's books now. But one of them called in the book I read, where I read to my kids, was that a show? Called The Turkey Prince. What's the story of The Turkey Prince? So it's a very interesting story. And it took me a while to actually understand what was going on. Even when I read it as a storybook to my kids, I didn't actually grasp what he was actually trying to tell me. But anyway, Blined, we'll try and explain it a little bit. The story is, the king has a son, and the king's son thinks he's a chicken. And the king's son thinks he's a chicken so much so that he takes off all his clothes and he goes around pecking in the dirt, and no one can help him. No one can help him. The king's son, he's crazy. He's cock-a-doodle-doo, right? All day long, sitting under the table, pecking away with no clothes on. Anyway, so the king tries to find all the wise men to try and help him. No one can help him. They don't know what to do. One of the king makes a decree that anyone who can help his son is going to be rewarded, and anyone who doesn't help him is going to face the consequences. Anyway, so one of the servants has been tasked with finding someone to help, and he knows that if he doesn't find someone to help the king's son, he's going to get in trouble. So he's looking around. Anyway, he's in the marketplace and he sees a small Jewish boy. And the Jewish boy, it's Friday afternoon, and the Jewish boy is buying chickens for Shabbos. And he's got a chicken in his hand that he's just bought. And anyway, the servant of the king is walking past, and he sees this Jewish boy with a chicken. And not being a very smart servant of the king, he thinks, chicken, Jewish boy, he knows chickens. You, come here. He said to you, you know chickens? And the boy says, well, I know what a chicken is. He said, good, come with me. And he grabs him and he takes him to the palace. Boy doesn't know what to do. Comes to the palace and he throws him in front of the king and says to the king, this boy knows all about chickens. So the king said, great, you can cure my son. Boy's like, I don't know. Said, there's my son, go and cure him. And if you don't, there's going to be trouble. What am I going to do? Goes over, sees the son of the king. And what's the king? Pecking away under the table. Pecking away, naked. Cock-a-doodle-doo, like a chicken. Boy doesn't know what to do. Starts to get worried. For a start, I need to get home for Shabbos. And my parents are going to be worried about me. And if I don't cure him, the king's going to... So anyway, so he thinks about it. After a while, he said he has an idea. He takes off all his clothes and sits under the table with the chicken, pecking away, just like the prince. Prince looks at him and says, what are you doing? He says, I'm a chicken too. He's like, okay, you're a chicken too. We have two chickens. And he pecks away. After a while, the boy says to the prince, you know what? It's a bit cold, isn't it? Prince says, yeah, it's a bit cold. He says, you know what? I think I'm going to put on some pants. So the prince looks over and says, but you're a chicken. So he says, yeah, I know I'm a chicken, but I can wear pants too. I can be a chicken wearing pants. It's still good. It's just warmer. So he's like, oh, okay, good idea. Let's do that. And he puts on pants too. And they carry on pecking away. A bit later on, the boy gets up and sits on a chair. And the prince looks at him and says, what are you doing? He says, I'm sitting on a chair. He said, but chickens don't sit on a chair. He says, why not? Chickens can sit on chairs too. No law that chickens are not allowed to sit on a chair. I'm a chicken, I'm sitting on a chair. He's like, it's more comfy this way. The floor's all hard and it's dirty. It's more comfy. So he says, oh, okay, sounds like a good idea. He gets on the chair too. And they're both pecking away, cock-a-doodle-doo. Eventually, he brings him back to being a human being. King's wonderful, gives him gifts, sends him away, goes home, makes Shabbos, everything's good. End of story. Took me a long time to work out what on earth Rav Nachman was trying to teach us with that story. Anyway, Bli Neder, I think one of the things that he was trying to teach you, maybe that's on a few different levels, but one of the things I learned from that story eventually after a while is a story about Kiruv. The prince's son, the king's son, is us. We're the king's son. But unfortunately, a lot of us, most of us, are walking around acting like chickens. We've forgotten that we're the king's son and we're acting just like, tough. We're on the beach, pecking away at our ice creams, surfing, and we've forgotten completely that we're actually meant to be in the palace doing holy things. Tough. We're acting like a chicken. How do you get a person who is acting like a chicken to start acting like a prince again? So you don't tell him, don't be stupid, you're a prince, get back in the palace, you idiot. No, I'm a chicken, I'm convinced I'm a chicken. Fine, how are you getting back to being acting like a prince? It's like, lad, it's okay, you can still be a cool, hip dude, but just put some clothes on. It's okay, you can still be trendy and one of the guys, but now you're one of the guys and you learn a little bit of Torah in the morning or you daven once in a while. You're still cool, it's still good, don't worry, everything's cool. Lad. He comes back to being the king's son. So too with, I have no clue how we got into that. So too with us, with change. With getting to what we need to do. Right? La, person who doesn't want to get married. It's not overnight. No one got married because someone said, you know what, you should get married. And they said, wow, chidush, brilliant idea. I never thought of that. Here I am, 42 years old, and never got married. And all I was waiting was for someone to tell me to get married. It's not going to happen that way. There's a process involved, there's steps. I just need to work out what those steps are. I need to do with Sechel. I need to work out what is it really that's going on here. You know what? You can still be married and you can still, I know, whatever you want to do, play pool. Right? You can still be married and you can still go to the beach, unfortunately, if you want to. Tough. Lad. You can still do that. Right? Anyway, so what are we talking about? All right, we're talking about here in the Rav Arish's book, no criticism, not to criticize our wives. Right? Not to criticize our wives. The Rav Arish said in the book that he learned from his Rav, Rav Bender. What did you learn from? Can't remember. With Berland. Two principles that this book was based on. Bli Neder, I think this is certainly one of them. Right? Not to criticize. Not to criticize our wives is, and we're going to see as the chapter unfolds in quite some detail, it's not so simple. It's a good idea, and most people would agree with us. If we go out on the street and asked 100 married men, or even not married, but even later, let's take the married. Is it a good idea to criticize your wife? 100 answers are going to be for sure no. And if we asked those same 100, Do you criticize your wife? 90% would say, no, I don't. For sure, I never criticize my wife. And the 10% who are telling the truth would actually say, yes, you know, I do. I made a mistake. But the 90% actually think that they're not criticizing their wife. I would never criticize my wife. Ask for shalom. Why would I do such a thing? But actually, they're either lying or they haven't realized that they actually are. We're going to see Be'ezrat Hashem as the chapter unfolds, how we fall into criticism without even realizing what we're doing. And as a result of this, it destroys a person's marriage. Because we're going to see that a woman cannot stand criticism. Not simply because she doesn't like it, she gets upset. No, I can't stand coffee. If you make me drink coffee, I'm going to get upset. It's not something, it's not a choice. Woman doesn't have a choice that she's just being awkward, that she can't take criticism. Like that, work on yourself and then you can take a bit of criticism. No, we, men, we can take criticism. We don't like it. But tough, if we work on ourselves, we work on the mida of not being so arrogant, and someone comes along and tells us that we're not doing something right, Baruch Hashem. We actually, if we're doing what we should be doing, if we're trying to serve Hashem, then we actually welcome criticism, because it's helpful. Especially constructive criticism, helpful advice where we're going wrong. Yofi, bring it on, that's what I need. If nobody gives me helpful advice, constructive criticism, I'm never going to learn. So actually, what we as men come at it from an idea of, well, actually criticism is a good thing. If it's done in the right way, it's a good thing. And that's where that's our mistake number one. Because we're actually thinking like men. We're not thinking like women. Yes.
I think most men think like women.
Meaning?
Today, because they don't like criticism too.
Yeah, fair.
They don't like.
Real
so
men,
like,
right?
They feel like, oh, no.
That's right. Now, hon, so real men, if we can use such a phrase in this day and age, real men are happy with criticism. It's very good. When a man acts like a woman, he can't take criticism, right? That's his feminine side has got there too much. He's got to, right? Person who spends their time doing too many. There are things that are women's things to do. To look after your hair, to make sure your clothes are matching and the colours are right, and Joffy, that's a woman's thing. There's one thing to be smart and to not have stains on your clothes. There's another thing to be stuck in front of a mirror. Men, generally speaking, should not be stuck in front of a mirror, right? To be so is a woman's place, not a man's place. A woman's got a reason for doing it. Joffy, she has it, right? But men acting like women, we're going to come to that. Be'ezrat Hashem, in the next chapter, that you can't have two women living together in the house. You need to have a man and a woman. Women living together in the house will tear each other's eyes out, right? Because they both want kavod. Because a woman has a different place. A woman and a man are opposites. They're not the same. They're opposites. What is it, opposites? The man is the giver and the woman is the receiver, right? Just as in the case of human physiology, so as the physiological aspect is only a reflection of the internal spiritual aspect. The man is a giver. He needs to give. That's his job. The woman needs to receive. She needs to. She also gives. Right, for sure she gives all the time. But her fundamental basis is to receive, to be a vessel, to receive. Right? Because we need to have... many reasons we need to have a vessel to give. Just like Hashem created the world in order that he could give, so too man who is in a reflection of Hashem, created in the reflection of Hashem, also needs to give. That's our job. We need to have who to give to. Therefore, here's a wife, family, whatever. Here's who to give to. We have that ability to give. However, what does it mean to be a woman? In this context, to want to receive. I need honor, I need my food on my table now, I need to have whatever I need to have my socks cleaned and ironed and pressed, and matching and folded in the drawer exactly how I like. All that I need. Exactly like a woman. Yeah.
And woman is a flower.
Uh-huh.
And water is Torah or Hashem.
Okay.
So if you are out, you give or come over to your wife. You give her water.
Uh-huh.
Okay. Then she show you beauty.
Right, Yafe.
Yafe.
Very nice. So Rabbi Reuven is saying that the when a man gives, it's like watering a flower, right? If we water a flower, the flower grows and is beautiful, and it's pareach and gives off a beautiful fragrance, and it looks lovely, and it's life. But if we don't give water to the flower, it dies. It's a very good analogy for a marriage, right? I can't take. Right, either that's part of the midot that a person works on in marriage. Right, I want to take. I'm going to take as much as I can. But in a marriage, I'm going to realize it doesn't work. I actually have to work on giving. And fundamentally, it comes back to that same question that we mentioned before. Fundamentally, that's what I want to do. My neshama wants to give. I've got the neshama of a man who wants to give. He wants to give, and I just need to get rid of those yetzaharas that stand in the way of doing that. And then I'm going to feel fulfilled. And so, Hashem, we will continue with this tomorrow.